Waitley on SEN.
The Monday Means Test for Jameson Whiskey, triple distilled, twice as smooth, one of a kind. Seven games in round 12. Sometimes we can splutter a bit in the bye rounds, but the footy was exceptionally good. We had to, we paid our dues on Friday night for the right to the rest of the weekend, but we got it. David King, hello.
Morning, G. How are you? How'd the weekend go?
Can I share this from William?
Yes.
So this is a previous caller, Rod, passionate Carlton supporter. Give them time, Jared. I want to try to get the tone right here. Right. Give them time? 28 years, six number one draft picks, seven coaches and five wooden spoons. Give them time, FFS. Emoji, 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 emoji. Heartbroken.
I'm not even sure you can say that, but well done. Now, I think he shares the passion of most. Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? When your team's really struggling when they probably shouldn't be, it's a real head scratch. And we try and find reason, we try and find answers or logic or things that have changed or things that can possibly be changed. And that's why we make the calls we do. I get a lot of feedback on it. I haven't started, Jared, and Jason from Sunbury's into me about who we're going to ride off this week or make the eight or pump up. 180 degrees different to last week. Well, that's footy, isn't it?
Opinions changes, evidence changes.
Well, if you get it right at round one, why are we playing 24 weeks?
Yes. So, your King's Gambit have been exceptional in recent times. What are you opening with today?
Well, I was going to say that nine games is too many and seven's about perfect, but we're heading to 10, so I better not say that. So if you win the first quarter of games, you win 65% of games, whether that be by one point or 20, you win 65% of games, okay? So of the weekend, despite the fact that we all think, gee, there was wild swings in games, which there were, Adelaide were ahead and lost, and the Dogs were ahead and lost. Outside of that, the other five that were ahead won. So if you just stick to the numbers. So Carlton and Melbourne, Carlton never led, right? They never led for the whole game, but the greatest margin was only 23 points. They were sort of in the game, even though it was an awful game to watch.
Yes.
For the whole game. Port blew it away early, 42 points, game over. Collingwood led by 24. It was a classic McRae sandwich. Daniel Horne's called this a McRae sandwich. Banked the win early, 24 points at the end of the first quarter. They won. They broke even in the second quarter. They won the third quarter by 2 points, and then bang, they won the last quarter by six goals. The Dogs kicked the first two goals, led at quarter time by only a couple of points. And for 100 minutes, for the first 100 minutes of the game, it was within a two-goal margin. I mean, that's the footy we want to watch. That was an awesome game to watch.
Yep.
A real treat on Saturday night. The Tigers were up by 24 points at quarter time, back to 13 at half time. GWS hit the front halfway through the last quarter. At the 32-minute mark of the last quarter, they led by a goal. So, like, that was just a cracking game to watch. Adelaide led by 35 points 10 minutes into the second quarter.
Yes.
35, but it's a big lead, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then 30 minutes of footy later, they've coughed up the lead. Nine unanswered goals to the GWS Giants. Gold Coast Suns. We haven't seen them do that before. So we're seeing new things. And I thought the Essendon Kangaroos game was a cracker. Essendon led by 20 points at quarter time, and then again, you know, 30-odd minutes of footy later, Kangaroos kick six unanswered. And with two and a half minutes to go, it's all square. So we had a great round of footy seven games.
Yep.
It makes me think that 10 games is going to be a punish, Jared.
If we just managed to pull one out to the Thursday night instead of having the overlap on Saturday night. And that old cliche, you got to play 120 minutes of footy. You had to play a lot longer than that yesterday. As one of our correspondents pointed out, the last quarter in Sydney, Giants-Richmond, went 38 minutes, 29 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I had a look at that because I was surprised that at the 32-minute mark, the Giants were a goal up and managed to lose. And I'm thinking, that can't be right. So I went and had a look. It's clearly because of the scoring, a lot of scoring, seven goals to five, so you lose minutes there. And a hell of a lot of stoppages, the most for the game, 28 for the quarter.
Right.
That's just shutting the game down, isn't it? I mean, Nankervis calls for himself in the last 2.5 minutes. He just laid his big frame on the ball. But it was a good round of footy, and those that enjoyed the spell probably, with neutral eyes on it, enjoyed it even more.
The big issue, I feel like the big issue is the Dogs, a team that aspires to be a top four team and have had it in their grasp over the past couple of weeks with the opportunity they opened up and either fumbled it or had it taken out of their grasp, whichever way you choose to view these things. So losing to the Suns in Darwin and losing to Geelong here. And it was just, Brad Johnson had the terms. He said it with Jared and Kane. He said it on Friday Night Footy. If they're the team that they want to be, they had to get Geelong on Saturday night and they couldn't. And they, you can feel the frustration bubbling through on the text.
Yeah. So to get back to Jason from Sunbury's point, it's hard outside looking in to work out why the Dogs are not a lock for top four this year, last year, the year before. It's not on talent, is it? I mean, they've got some superstar talent. So is it the way they play that leaves other teams in the game? Are they just not efficient with the ball? Are they just not playing the game that allows them to score freely? I'm not sure what the perfect goal is for the Dogs. I'm not sure what it looks like. What, in your mind's eye, what does the perfect goal look like for the Dogs that necessarily doesn't involve a Bontempelli or a McRae or a Libert? Like, this is the system goal. What does it look like? I don't know if I can answer that with any clarity. I'd be sort of guessing. You know, I'm hot on them defensively. Their numbers stack up okay. And the general points against and all those sorts of things, they stack up okay. But as soon as Liam Jones is not a major factor behind the ball, it looks incredibly vulnerable. And then now they've got a problem with Ed Richards, who saves them time and time. He's a star, yeah. Ed Richards. As soon as he went off, I thought they're in real trouble here, real trouble. It was brilliant coaching by Chris Scott to set the game up the way he did. Lee Montagna showed that terrifically last night. They basically pulled all their half forwards up and left space in behind and charged back. I talk about the forward 50 efficiency of the Cats all the time. Just they know what the forwards want. It's like, you know that Hawkins is going to mark the ball boundary side every time. We talked about Fremantle covering that a couple of weeks ago. Great coaching ahead of the curve. But they just have a way of just finishing 5-8. You know, I know they won it from 7th in 2016. Everyone will talk about that, but they are better than this. They are better than, what are they now? What, 7-5 or something? In my opinion, they're a better team than that. So why aren't they? Like, last man on the list is Liam Jones, really. He shouldn't be a major player in what they're doing here. I know he's experienced. I know he's got probably two years of footy left. But shouldn't it be others by now? I scratch my head with them. I'm not sure. I don't know if the Dogs fans have got more clarity than that. I look at Aaron Norton. He has one kick during the second and third quarters, and I go, "Well, you're really maximising him." Like, Jeremy Cameron is a like type, and people say he's not. He's a different player than him, but it's a like position. Throw Norton on the ball. Throw him behind the ball. Richards goes down. Hey, let's just put Norton behind the ball for 5 minutes. You can't pack mark everything in the forward line anyway. I know I'm banging on about Aaron Norton, okay? But he's, prior to this round, I haven't updated the numbers just yet, he took 17 contested marks inside 50 and 11 uncontested. That's a shocking balance. That's you're basically just kicking the ball on top of packs and saying, "Aaron, can you sort this out for us?" I think Jamar is playing some really good footy and looks like he's about to go bang and take a couple of games by the throat. I like what Waitman does. He works so hard, but nothing comes easy for those guys. So they got problems, not irreversible. The season's far from irretrievable. It's a long year. We keep talking about that, but this has got to be a top four team.
So that's the point is, that's what they haven't been able to do yet. It's what they set themselves up for. They had they fumbled the start of the season and then sorted themselves out. They go on their winning stretch and then, sort of right at the moment that it's there for them. They go into the top four if they beat the Suns. They can't get that done. And then, you know, plant your flag day against Geelong. It's Geelong who does it to them. Is that was the stand against the wall. Their main source of goals is an act of God. That's the frustration level that has built around them. Here was Luke Beveridge in the aftermath of just sort of the critical things that are wrong.
You lose one player in Ed Richards and you should still be able to cover. It felt like the cascade of the roles within our team we found it difficult. Ed and JJ had been influential for a period of time. So now we've got a challenge on our hands. It's one of the reasons why we played Caleb Daniel back to a bit of experience and to fuel our game. I thought, you know, at times our ball movement looked really promising, but it just broke down just through, you know, I asked the boys, was it greasy? Was there dew inside the stadium? And because I just felt like in open field and taking the ball across the ground, we just didn't execute well by foot, which is a real shame because we had some looks.
And being there, that brought them undone time and again in the first half. The field kicking, English was enormous in the game, but they didn't turn that into anything hugely advantageous.
He's the Australian ruckman, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Bontempelli's in the top four or five players in the comp.
And this is our conversation has been, and it breaks both ways, is they've had three of the top five players by ratings in English, Bontempelli and Liberatore, and yet they just can't seem to parlay that into the team that they want to be and we expect them to be.
So is it so? I guess the nub of the whole the question: what is it? What's missing? What's the restrictor? Is it simply that last kick inside 50? Well, it's been that way for a long period of time. This is why I say take Norton out there, right? We every team goes through periods in their growth where they just become so predictable and go to the same target because he's your best target. Sometimes to the detriment of everyone else in the forward line. Norton's down there. He'll bail me out. I'll just kick a 55-metre kick into the top of the square because I won't get in trouble for that kick. Because that's just going to our best player. And there's no way he's going to mark that ball. If he's not there and you lift your eyes and you don't see that big presence, sometimes you fish to find something else. And you can actually correct quite quickly just by not having that dominant target there. So I wonder whether it's time to just have a look at it. You've got Ed Richards not there. He's probably been their premier intercept player, certainly of the smalls. Liam Jones has been outstanding, and then it's Richards. If Richards is not going to be there for 2 to 3 weeks with the hamstring, why wouldn't you have a look at it? You can't have a marquee player having one kick in two quarters of footy. And what, he kicked the goal in the first probably 6 minutes of the game? He took a contested mark. He goes, oh, he's on today. And you don't see him for another hour and a half.
Yep. Take Errol's tip as well. It's once you start to look for the number of times they have multiple players fly at the same ball. Oh, yeah. It's all I could see on Saturday night. Errol, it was amazing. What a canny insight that proved. They're our big issue, the Dogs, after round 12. Heap of stuff to go. The debate, we'll debate the Dugowie penalty. The best bits, we'll salute Luke Bruce and his 500th goal. And we'll run a bit of PFI across Port Adelaide and what they were able to do on Saturday. The Monday Means Test with David King is for Jameson Whiskey, triple distilled, twice as smooth, one of a kind.
Want to have your say? Ring Jared on 1300 736 736. Now, back to Waitley.
Stops, props, gives it back to Bruce. Bruce has a go. There it is! Number 500 for Luke Bruce.
Hit the post with his first two shots to bring up that milestone. But he's now in the company, David King, of Brent Harvey, Brad Johnson, Stephen Milne, and Eddie Betts. That's a Hall of Fame threshold at 500, if ever you saw one.
Oh, he's a total star. He's so consistent, isn't he, Luke Bruce? And you know where he started, Jared? Do you know where he started?
In New South Wales?
Sydney Swans reserves.
Right, yes.
I remember Brett Allison saying years ago, this kid's going to be all right.
Yep.
And then somehow he ended up, I don't know how he got to Hawthorn. No idea how he got to Hawthorn, but he's a walk-up Hall of Famer. We love watching him play. We love the humility of the man. He just looks like a ripper teammate. Well done.
It felt like the best bits in the weekend. And Sam Mitchell was down on the bench, walked out of the dugout to give him a round of applause, which was a beautiful gesture from a former teammate as well. So the best bit, Luke Bruce with his 500th goal. We're going to debate the Dugowie penalty. We'll have a look through Essendon and Carlton as they prepare to meet next Sunday night. And in terms of they got that right, Gold Coast got its 2 weeks in Darwin spot on.
This is your town. This is your station. This is Waitley.
The Monday Mean Test with David King after the seven games of round 12. The debate is for Syfe. Smarter investing backed by the pros. Download Syfe. An incident like Jordan De Goey's is always a motive. It's a motive when it happens in an environment like Western Australia, although that didn't combust as much as it might have. It's a motive to look at from the outside and try to assess culpability and intention and then penalty. And that's all played out before us in the hours afterwards as to whether you think it's a weak act or a football action where you are in that scale. Some of that is academic. Is it boils down to what price do you pay in such a moment? So what did you make of it, David King?
Just for me, it felt like the first time that everyone in football was accepting that this is no longer part of our game. So I think this is a significant moment that everyone's talking about. No, that's not part of our game anymore. He's decided to bump, he's hit the head or he's left the ground, whatever adjectives you want to put to it. I'm just thrilled we're here. That this isn't acceptable anymore. And you've got your head in the sand if you think it is. And there'll be a number, and I'm not sure what that number will be, whether it's 3, 4, 5. We're here. We're finally here. The first time I've felt like we are actually doing something about protecting the player from someone else who's acting outside of the code. Fractionally, marginally, split-second decision, all that stuff, granted, right? But I've heard for years, no, Jordan De Goey didn't mean to do that. So what he was doing was this, and what he was doing was that. I haven't heard that at all. So we're here now. And so the bar's been set. I think it'll be 4 weeks because I think 3 is the concussion tick is at 3, and then leaving the ground, you know, it was a pretty vicious hit in the end. It becomes 4. The football world will live with that. There'll be no recourse, I don't think, from Collingwood. They'll accept it, get on with it. Similar to what Geelong did last year with Tom Stewart. Just take your whacks, move on. Don't complain, don't explain, keep rolling.
Yeah, it does put me very much in mind of the Tom Stewart incident from last year against Richmond. He got 4. I do feel like it. If that had happened this year, that there was a view that would actually start at 5 now, is sort of as the increased, the heightened awareness and the threat of what all this means long term, that might move to 5. I reckon it's just a half a peg below Stewart. I don't know. That's just intuitively how I feel. So if it was on last year's scale, I reckon it'd be 3. I wonder if this year's scale has it at 4, but it'll be one or the other, I think.
It has elevated, hasn't it?
That would be that instinctively, that's how I would feel, and I guess we're about to learn that.
So I think now, so we've won the war with the bump, yep. Okay? So now the war flares a little bit, and this will be an adjustment period to the next phase. So if you put all the possible ways of getting concussion on a board, and you went the highest percentages down, the bump's number one. Most concussions would come from a bump.
Yep.
Bang. What's the second most? Sling tackle. So we've gone pretty hard at the sling tackle, but we've wavered a couple of times. The dump tackle, the one now that's absolutely marginal that people are still arguing about. Hey, get used to it. Work it out. Right? Play the long game here. This will be unacceptable in 12 months. So adjust now. And then what's next after that? We're just going to keep going down and down and down and down. And I for one, are thrilled that we can tick off box one. Box two is going to take some adjusting. I still hear commentators make hundreds of different excuses as to why a player can end up with his face smacked into the ground and head trauma, but not enough to be concussed. So it's okay. He's fine. He's okay. We'll just roll on. No. The whole code is on notice regarding now the next 2 to 3 instances or actions that bring concussion.
Yeah. So Nathan Broad laid the worst of the dangerous tackles that we've seen this year and got 4.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like the scale has lifted and where De Goey could find himself.
See, I think I asked for 6 with that one.
Yep.
Because I thought that was in. Yeah. And people say, 6, that's ridiculous. But maybe I'm going too far one way to try and counterbalance the argument. And I accept that feedback, but I'd rather be there than not.
What will it do to Goey? What would it do for Collingwood? Is this going to be a lengthy suspension?
Yeah, and we make a comment last night. I think he's worth four goals a game to Collingwood. He'll kick a couple himself, and he's the way he plays, he's that corridor runner. He's up and down the corridor all day, and they give him the ball as often as they can. He doesn't have to be the goal kicker. He puts players into space. He makes the correct decision every time in real time. Yeah, 100%, you know, rat power. He's able to have the clarity to say, no, now's not the time to kick. Handball it back. I showed some vision last night of just how calm he is in a crisis. Now, that's going to hurt them. Now, they will probably replace the role, okay? And you'll probably see Crisp do more of that running, who's the same sort of player in terms of having clarity. And Bernard, he's not Jordan DeGoey, but he understands that role. But the bottom line is there's not too many Jordan DeGoey's kicking around in the back pocket to just throw into that sort of area. So it'll hurt them for a couple of weeks. And it just makes next Monday huge. You know, if Melbourne want to be a top four team, they've got to win this game. So the margin's there, and we touched on Geelong. Geelong are waiting for a couple to just have a few hiccups along the way, and this is one of those games.
Want to have your say? Ring Jared on 1300 736 736. Now, back to Waitley.
It is World Test Championship Week, Wednesday night from the Oval, right here on SEN Test Cricket. It's Australia and India. And a little Ashes heart starter with the Bazballers making a mess of Ireland with some record-breaking run-scoring spree on Friday night, which was something to behold. The stakes are high, even higher, I think, after Dave Warner's expressed desire to see a farewell Test match in Sydney come January, against a backdrop of what is a nationwide debate whether he should even be there at Edgbaston at the start of this Ashes run. It ratchets up the stakes in what is a pretty tense time. If selectors drop him now, it looks like they're ending one of the all-time careers. The coach, Andrew McDonald, in this studio a week ago, was as unequivocal of Warner's credentials as anyone in the Australian setup had been. He guaranteed him the first two Test matches, and then what happens beyond. Here was the coach after Warner had expressed his heart's desire that, all going well, he'll be there in Sydney come January.
I think it's great that he's planning on playing a lot longer. So, and as you said, I mean, the discussion around any player will always come down to form and how they fit, how the team's functioning. And what we're seeing from Dave here in terms of his preparation's been, you know, high level again. He's ready for the contest. And I suppose that speaks volumes around that comment that, you know, he's looking forward and believes he can still impact this team. And you wouldn't want a player thinking anything else, would you? So Sydney's obviously a long way off. What's in front of us at the moment is the World Test Championship final, and no doubt that Dave's thought about how, you know, all three formats work and potentially what the future holds for him. But come the 7th, I think he'll be pretty zeroed in on whatever that contest looks with the new ball.
His long-term place has been honoured at the top of the order in the World Test Championship. Beyond that, well, I just think he would want to make runs. He would want to make runs in England. So we're going to rely on the wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock, especially over the next 6 or 7 weeks. Crash, it! What an exciting time we're about to launch into.
Yeah, look, I love your little prequel there, Jared. It was lovely to get to this week. And you know, just the World Test Championship. A lot of people still struggle to get their heads around what it actually is. But I think it's growing, and I like what it's doing for Test cricket. A lot of talk about eligibility for it, who's going to get there, who won't. You know, it's bigger than it was a couple of years ago when New Zealand won it, so it does mean a lot. But yeah, Warner's declaration he's playing on, it really has spiced up the plot, hasn't it? Or he wants to play on, shall I correct myself?
So I defer to your wisdom and experience in these moments, Crash, but if you ever wanted to understand the selfish nature of cricket, I think this is it. It's an individual sport played in a team environment. Warner had the chance to call his own timeline if he'd gone out in the SCG test in January off the back of his double century. I think this inflames the debate that the selectors are having at the moment with a magnitude that sits over it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? But look, Jared, he's not the first person to set a long-term goal and strive to get it as a batsman and perhaps fall short if he does. Doug Walters retired after not getting a farewell tour of India, England rather. Ian Healy, remember, wanted one last test at the Gabba before the selectors replaced him with Adam Gilchrist. He didn't get it. David Boone wanted a farewell test, farewell Ashes series. He was working towards it and he just fell short. So, but it certainly has intensified the debate over Warner's future. I don't think his statement greatly changes the narrative. And I'll tell you why. Because if he's in form in this Ashes series, he will progress effortlessly to the Pakistan series, which is three tests in Australia, and then he would quit on his home ground. If he fails in the Ashes, the selectors are not going to protect him, protect his long-term goal. You know, that they will move on. The only area, Jared, where I think it will tell, and that is simply this. If he gets to the Pakistan series in Australia next summer, they will not drop him during it. That wouldn't happen. He wouldn't fall one test short of getting to Sydney in his final test. I mean, I just reckon they'd give him that, you know, particularly if they win. But it certainly came out of the blue, I have to say.
Yes, and it was sort of an extension on what he had given himself before, which was the 50-over World Cup. Anyway, I think, I know not, and it's just my view, I do think this has the capacity to unsettle the entire Australian camp. If he doesn't make runs early, I think this becomes a major issue that they will have to grapple with and deal with.
Yeah, I don't believe his pledge becomes a major issue. I don't, because that's just a player setting a long-term goal. He'd like to get to it. But I do think the two most singularly important selection issues on this tour, by a substantial margin, are Warner's future and Josh Hazlewood, who was ruled out of the Test Championship. He bowled brilliantly, apparently, in the nets with enormous gusto, but then maybe he just felt something wasn't quite right and they put Michael Nisa into the squad for the final and Josh won't be playing. So the Hazlewood and Warner are their big issues, 100%. But I say again, no matter what David says about his future, it will be irrelevant to the selection equation in England. He will either, if he is out of form for three or four tests, that will be it. If he's in form, he carries on seamlessly to Australia. And not, and once he's back in Australia, where we all know he tends to score a lot of runs, they won't drop him mid-series. He will either get that series or he won't. He will know at the start of the summer whether he can retire in Sydney. It's interesting. Steve Waugh, remember, did a last lap against India. He got there. But it was pretty tense times, though, I have to say.
So if Warner didn't make the end of this Ashes series, would that be it? Could you see him? Because as you rightly point out, he makes runs for fun in Australia.
Yes, well, that would be it. That would be it. Look, he's in his mid-30s. He's had a great run. For mine, he's one of the most underrated players in Australian cricket history because just what he did, you know, to start off playing white ball cricket, 20-over cricket, and expand his game from there was extraordinary. Greg Chappell and very few others saw it in him. You know, when he was slogging in the nets in Zimbabwe, Greg said to him, "David, if you're going to, you can be a five-day player, but bat sensibly in the nets, please. You know, you can do it. You can go the long journey." So he got there, and Warner himself said, "I don't think there'll be another me." And it sounded like a statement dripping in hubris, but it wasn't. I sort of get what he was saying because he's been incredibly adaptable. Now, they're giving him every chance, but that chance is not forever, Jared. They want these Ashes. They know it's the defining series for a group of players who have grown from boys to men together. Hazlewood, Stark, Cummins, Lyon, they've been together for 10 years. They haven't had that golden stud at the end of their career. This is their 2 months. No individual prize will be prioritised ahead of group glory on this trip. And that's just a fact.
The Hazlewood conundrum. So I suspect there's an element here of Josh being comfortable in his own body because these are not recent issues, are they? They stretch across a couple of years. Is Andrew McDonald, when he was in the studio, if you read between the lines, he just wasn't going to be ready for the World Test Championship, and they were hoping that he would be ready for the first test. So it's on a knife's edge, clearly, when he will feel ready to bowl at his optimum day in, day out.
And it's terribly tricky, Jared, because there's no warm-up games per se. It's such a compressed tour with six tests in about 7.5, 8 weeks that how will they know when he's ready? I mean, bowling in the nets is fine, but that's what one of the reasons Australia had such success in the 90s and the 2000s in England was because they had a long list of county games to sort out all their issues. Now there's none. So, and even to the fact that Scott Boland's going straight into the team, apparently, for the World Test Championship, so which means they'll have four bowlers having a cold start. You know, I just, man, oh, man, Michael Neeser, who's been running hot in English county cricket for Glamorgan with bat and ball, gee, I would have been tempted to play him, Jared.
Yeah.
Not as the first choice, that's Cummins. And maybe not even as the second choice, but certainly the third choice. You know, I just think, you know, he's when all bowlers are coming from a standing start into a World Test final and you're ignoring the guy who's had whose engine's been rumbling for 2 months, big call. Big call.
What a glorious mystery this one-off test match is as a grand final. Is the Indian players are largely out of the IPL. Australian players are coming from all sorts of different setups. There's no preamble to it. They're on neutral territory. I couldn't be more... What sort of pitch will it be? I couldn't be more fascinated with how this is going to look on Wednesday night.
Yeah, no, I'm the same, Jared. There is so much mystery to it. Like, one thing I will say, though, not to be underestimated are India's swing bowlers. Mohammad Shami bowls a beautiful outswinger. Siraj is very good. And if I was them, I would actually drop Ashwin and play a fourth seamer and let Ravi Jadeja do the spin bowling. So anything could happen. I mean, there's a feeling that, oh, India won't be India when they get to England. But they play, the days of India being spin-centric are gone. You know, they've got beautiful swing bowlers. And I remember about 3 years ago when Mohammad Shami was bowling in England, someone said he's more of an English seamer than the English seamers. Yeah. So beautiful swing bowler.
Yeah, so do you have a gut feel? Which way would you lean if I nailed your foot to the floor?
I just think I quite like – I reckon this generation of Australian players have been building up this game, secretly prioritising it for a couple of years in a way that I'm not sure whether the Indians are. And that can work for you or against you, but I just think we'll know early. I've just got this feeling one team will turn up and the other won't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be like that when they're both coming into foreign conditions. It's a hard one to read. I do like what this test is doing for cricket. I really do. And I know my old mate Gideon Haig said it's sort of basically cricket playing lip service to a dying form of the game. And he's right, because away from this, there's no attempt anywhere to reconstruct the glory of test cricket. But I don't know. I think it can be quite special, this little event, because Jared, we've spent so much time talking about who's in the final and who's going to get there the last 2 years, and I think that will grow in stature over the next 2 years as well.
You tipped your hand a couple of weeks ago, and it occurred to you that Australia is going to win the Ashes. Did you watch the Baz Ballers on Friday night?
Oh, I know. They completely decimated the poor old Irish team. Like, what was the score? 540 odd or something like that. But, hey, guess what? I saw something overnight that absolutely convinced me Australia will win the Ashes, and that is the stunning news that their spinner, Jack Leach, has been ruled out of the series. Now, I know a lot of people listening to us would say, oh, yeah, Jack Leach, he's just okay, the left-arm spinner, he just whacks away. But guess what? He's the only spinner in England to take more than 10 first-class wickets this season. There is no one behind him. There is, you know, we think we're struggling before Todd Murphy with Nathan Lyon back up, they are worse. Their frontline spinner could be Joe Root for the Ashes. So that's, and you know what? They're competing against the very underestimated Nathan Lyon, who last time in England took 20 wickets at 31. Rock solid performance. Not the star, but the supplementary cement that every winning challenge needs, you know? So I just, when I saw that overnight, it just convinced me that Australia will win this series, Jared.